Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, and thank you for joining us for our third and final Fright Fest special. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on this edition, I'm chatting to Arel Anthony Hayes and Sam Casserly about their debut feature, They're Outside, a film that makes the unusual step of melding folk horror with found footage. Over the course of the interview, we chat to them about the development of the film, why they decided to co-direct the feature, and also how they managed to get genre stalwarts Nicholas Vince and Emma Booth to come on board the project. Away from the film, Arel and Sam tell us about their next pick, the Santa Claus werewolf movie Frostbite, which started just filming this week, as well as highlighting the many, many other projects they've got currently going on their slate. Also, we have a quick moan about the term elevated horror. You can hear all that and much, much more besides in just a sec. But before we get there, I would just like to quickly remind you the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. But now, on to the interview with Arel and Sam. Hi, Arel. Hi, Sam.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Welcome to New Horror Express, the two of you. We've got you on today to talk about your film, They're Outside. So, first of all, for the listeners, can you give us a brief synopsis of They're Outside?
Go for it, Sam.
Okay. They're Outside is about a YouTuber who makes videos about himself helping people. He's a YouTube psychologist, and he helps people with, you know, people with drug issues, people with homelessness, people who have mental health issues, but he's not really qualified to do it. And it's a bit like the kind of your traditional obnoxious YouTuber like Jake Paul, or someone who's kind of an attention seeker, and he's really in it for the views. And he ends up making a documentary about an agoraphobic woman in Hastings, and she hasn't left the house in 5 years. And he set himself the challenge of helping her leave the house within 10 days. So she lives in the middle of the woods, and she is fearful for a pagan mythology about the Green Eyes character. And I'll get Anthony to talk more about Hastings, growing up in Hastings, and writing the film.
The central idea of this was that somebody's agoraphobia is tied into something supernatural, not psychological. And that a very skeptical YouTuber, and all the modern stuff of YouTube and telephones, gets sunk into this old ancient pagan myth, basically forcing him to have some kind of reckoning for his past and supernatural beliefs. So it's about can he get her outdoors in 10 days? Can he do that? Can he get her to leave the house in 10 days? And he tries, but there's a lot of weird stuff going on outdoors. They're outside, something is outside, and it's really about unraveling that mystery.
And we shot it in a kind of documentary style, because it's the footage that he's shot to film his experience with Sarah Sanders, the character that he's helping. We've also got Nicholas Vince, who presents the documentary about this character.
Yeah, Nicholas Vince is great. He's got a guy from Hellraiser, Emily Booth, who's a horror favourite from things like, she's actually in Grindhouse, in Tarantino's Grindhouse, and then films by Jake West. So Jake West is a real Fright Fest favourite. Some great, talented new actors as well. All set in Hastings, real town where I grew up, where there are pagan beliefs. And we wanted to make up a story that felt like it would have been a story in Hastings that people might have been telling late at night to scare each other. And somebody told me oh, I've heard that Green Eyes story. I've heard about that, which they haven't because we made it up. So they might have heard about the Green Man or something, but it's cool because it felt like we did tell a story that they thought they'd heard before.
And we filmed a lot of it during the Green Man Day celebrations in May, which is set in Hastings, and it's to sort of celebrate the beginning of summer and the end of spring.
It's called the traditional Jack in the Green. Ever since I was a kid, I love going to this. You've got a traditional day where there are Morris dancers, chimney sweeps, and the centrepiece is up by Hastings Castle. They rip greenery off a man dressed as a giant tree or bush to release the summer. So this custom, this ritual was always so fascinating. And I always wanted to put it on camera, you know, Wicker Man-esque. We all love the Wicker Man, and it always feels like it's the real Wicker Man. So to do a found footage film, kind of going slightly guerrilla into that festival is felt like it would be a lot of fun. So yeah, it's very much about those pagan customs around May Day.
And Ariel, did you do much like reading into like pagan myths or anything while making up the script for the film?
I did. So the whole Golden Bough and the whole history of May Day and the Jack in the Green Festival in Hastings, I realised that I'd been to it every year but wanted to know a lot more about why it was there. And there's so many conflicting beliefs here. Some people would say it's a pagan festival. Some people say it's got nothing to do with any kind of pagan belief and it's just a kind of nature carnival. But I absolutely did. I mean, in the same way that, you know, May Day traditions in a kind of pagan culture do stand for certain things. The maypole is the male penis, crazy as it is, with kids dancing around it. And, you know, you got things like, even, you know, it comes into so many things. So Christmas, when we bring the Christmas tree in, it's kind of tied into bringing greenery, and it's kind of a pagan thing, even that. But going back to the May Day stuff, there was a lot of research done into this particular Jack in the Green custom, Hastings folklore, general local legends. In Hastings, we've got so many stories about, we've got this pub where there are cats' bodies in the wall of it, I believe. And it's meant to have been put there by a witch who was using them in her spells. And we've got lots of narrative and ghost stories in that way. So it felt very natural, more so than somewhere like London. I think it's a lot easier to set a ghost story in a seaside town than in London in a way, because it's disassociated. And as we know, folk means, you know, different folk in a way, folk horror, found footage folk horror, which is what we tried to do, is when you kind of leave London and you end up at the end of a seaside town with its old ghost train and its Jack in the Green annual tradition. So yeah, it all kind of came from that. And I did do a lot of research into that to learn more about it.
Because we traveled down for a few days to do a bit of a recce. And it's interesting to meet all the crafts people in the kind of making kind of, well, they like the Jack in the Green face symbols and ornaments. And you go around town and most of them generally are pagans. They generally believe in the mythology. A lot of the greater people who work in a sort of knick-knack shops around town selling these kind of, well, those kind of crystals that they sell, you put on your windows.
Yeah, it's very much built into the town. I mean, everyone gathers together each, obviously with COVID, very sadly, it didn't really happen this year, but, you know, in April, they begin preparing. And it's not just that, the whole town, you know, when I grew up, I was taken to spirit churches and told that my granddad was behind me, and stuff that just was really weird. So I would also go to this thing called the Festival of Mind, Body and Spirit. And then there was one event that I went to with my mum where somebody said that they were possessed by somebody else and they shut their eyes and they woke back up and they spoke to everybody as this new person. Now, as somebody that doesn't believe in ghosts, I found all this really, really fascinating. Don't think I believed in it then, certainly don't now, but I love the mentality that goes into that, the kind of ritual of a town that does those kind of things. It's an incredible kind of atmosphere to something like that, any of those events?
Well, I grew up kind of as a Catholic kid. I kind of grew out of it when I got a bit older. But then that kind of fear of God and fear of, you know, death was kind of instilled in me when I was a kid. But my the only kind of funny kind of mythology that was in my family is my Irish grandmother, to her dying day, believed in leprechauns. And she
aren't real.
Into her 80s, she was telling me about seeing leprechauns as a kid in Ireland. That was kind of my only kind of parallels between paganism growing up myself.
Green leprechaun, right? The Jack, you know, Jack in the green eyes. It's always green. What's going on with the green?
Just an attraction to green for some reason. And Sam, at what point did you come on to the project? Did you develop this kind of together, or did Ariel bring the script to you?
Well, I've worked on a lot of, because Anthony's a writer as well, and I've worked on a lot of these other written projects. I was kind of a second AD on a film called Heckle, which is about a killer, heckler who gets his revenge on a stand-up comedian who puts him down. My second AD on that project.
That's up very soon. We can't announce that completely, but that's Steve Gutenberg, who was in Police Academy in a really dark kind of role, and Toya Wilcox, crazy cast, Danny Dyer, who won Love Island in the first Love Island. That's coming up. We'll talk more about that soon, yeah.
Yeah, well, and we've kind of worked on, you know, lots of little projects before over the last 5 years. And then I kind of, you know, wrote the project and we're going to work on it together, filmed it together. So I was kind of behind the camera as well. Because I come from more of a production background and Anthony comes more from producing and...
A bit of both now. I mean, there's been a lot of experience in both. But the thing with Sam that was so great was he doubled as DOP. So he was helping find some really interesting shots with the whole pagan vibe. There's so much going on in terms of colours and lighting and a carnival atmosphere. So to navigate that, particularly that one day when they have the festival, was almost like military tactics, wasn't it? It's crazy.
Yeah, that was the hardest day of filming that day because we were getting so much stuff done. We were trying to film, we filmed about 5 or 6, 7 scenes in that particular day, just because we were trying to get the atmosphere around and we were setting it all over Hastings. So we were kind of, we were filming the beginning of the festivities down by the sea in the morning, and then as they walk up the hill throughout the day, we were darting around different locations, filming other scenes, and then coming back and hitting checkpoints along the journey to film extra bits with the Green Man procession. And it was kind of like a military operation. And by the end of the day, I was absolutely knackered because when I was filming, there's a shot where they're ripping, all the Morris dancers are dancing around the tree and ripping, and then they start ripping off the leaves. I was in a big crowd and I had to like hold the camera above my head for like, you know, about an hour to get the shot that I needed. It was like being in a mosh pit a lot of the time.
Did you find it a big kind of step up in at all? Like, I understand it's your first feature film. I know you've worked in shorts and stuff.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it's more the ghost story thing. So, we knew that the casts were very good. It's just hard to write a ghost story. I was really happy to see that found footage is having a good time at the moment. I thought the host was really good and fun and scary. And I thought that there's a film called Followed coming out, and then things like Willow Creek and Borderlands are really good. So it was more telling a ghost story in found footage. Where you've obviously always got the god of Blair Witch looking down upon everything. So it was a step up in that we knew we had to make people believe in the situations, and we were really happy when it kind of seemed to land quite well at Fright Fest, and we got some nice feedback and some people found the ending pretty scary. You've seen the film, right? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen it. It was one of the films I saw at Fright Fest, yeah.
Cool. So the ending... most people liked it. Obviously, we get a bit scarier. It's not really doing jump scares. It's more of a slow build of atmosphere, and then right at the end, it goes a bit crazier, really.
Yeah, I think we deliberately tried to not have jump scares, I think, because we were trying to go against what you'd expect, really. And I think we tried to build a kind of scary atmosphere throughout the film, other than how many things pop out and things like cupboards and doors slam, things of that nature.
Which we love too, but it's, and the thing is, it is a step up in terms of Fright Fest. So we love Fright Fest. Sam and I go every year to that. It's just so much fun. And then to be part of it, you just know you've got a lot of critical reception and a lot of eyeballs on you, and it suddenly has got this, to be picked for the festival, it's just got a lot of attention. So we didn't want to be crucified. And we were lucky in that we kind of weren't. It feels like we generally, looking at the critical feedback, have given an interesting newfound footage film to people, and we're now seeking distribution for that, of course. So it's... it was scary that, yeah, it is a step up, because you do want to not be, you know, just the thing that let people down. You don't want to let people down. And I'm happy to say, I don't think we did. I think we kind of made some people quite happy with it, which is good.
Yeah, some really good, really great feedback, especially from the actors as well. I mean, there's really good, some really good feedback about especially Emily Booth's performance. I think they've seen this as kind of a new role for her. And she's got some really, really good reviews and really naturalistic performance that she put on. Obviously, Tom, our lead actor, has got some fantastic reviews, but lots of people saying they absolutely hated him and they really wanted him to meet his demise.
And we don't care about that. We like that he's such a dick. I don't think you've got to like people in movies. I think...
I did wonder that, you know, just if you'd thought about making him less of a dick.
No, we wanted to own it. So what it is that there's this thing, make the bad guy badder. And Begbie or who's the, you know, there's so many, Jordan Belfort, The Wolf of Wall Street. I think when you've got a bad guy...
Because traditionally you follow your main character is the normally the likable person. But with this one, we create a really interesting character. And it's a unique experience following this guy that... He's a really well-rounded, three-dimensional character, but he's not necessarily, he puts on a front of being, he's quite a bad guy. He's very unpleasant. Yeah.
I mean, it's really interesting that, because some people, Kim Newman, critic I really respect, said, you know, when we find out that he's had a hard past, it doesn't justify him being such a dick. But the thing is, we're not trying to justify him being such a dick. He's just, you know, in life, you do come across these people who are just like not very nice. And I think it's quite interesting to watch those people on screen. It becomes a little bit, when you do a nice person or the big save the cat moment and all the rest of it. Yeah, I get why we want to get behind a character. It's also nice to kind of, I think we get behind the girlfriend a bit. Sarah, I get it. It's hard to fully get behind her because she's a bit standoffish. But you kind of bring something of yourself to these characters, I think, with this, because it's quite an open book. It's a tricky one, but yeah, him being a bit of a dick.
They made it more
of a dick.
As the film goes on to this third act, both the main characters, Sarah and Max, both develop as well. So you do see, I mean, small moments of redemption here and there. But I mean, you know, trying something completely new. You know,
it's fun to try a film where I mean, they did it in the 80s all the time. You just got constant dick characters being slashed up in the woods. So we just thought we'd put it in a ghost story. No. I mean, we like some of the characters a lot, and we do give them arcs. Sometimes you just got in a film like Wrong Turn. I love those movies, but there's not really arcs or anything. They're just kind of like this, you know, Final Destination 3 or something. The guy's just a dick and he's just going to get killed. And we didn't do that, but I suppose
it's slightly different. I suppose you don't have to really follow those characters. You're just waiting for them to be sliced up in a kind of entertaining and or innovative manner.
Yeah. So we're waiting for Green Eyes to prove that ghosts are real and take Tom to hell, or not Tom, Max is the character name. So I think we know he's going to get his comeuppance. And I think it's interesting when there's a nasty character on the screen and you just go, oh my God, what is he doing? I find it more fascinating than Kevin Costner once said, you know, it's really boring to play Robin Hood. And then in the same film, you got Alan Rickman just being a total, you know, nasty bastard. And that's way better, way more fun to play that role, to play the villain. So I just think the dark side in horror, it was always about the dark side anyway, is just the right way to go with some characters. And of course, Green Eyes brings out the absolute worst in Max. So it's not even fully him at the end. It's that those parts of him are being really turned inside out by the supernatural force in a way, without wanting to give away too many spoilers.
We should talk about Tom, who plays Max. He's actually completely different from his, in real life, completely different from the guy that you see on screen.
Yes.
He's played by Tom Clayton Wheatley. And he was previously in the Mamma Mia musical. So, and he was in the sequel film as well. So he's coming from like a musical background to playing a protagonist in a horror movie, which is kind of an interesting journey for him. But he was great to work with, and he could just turn his acting on like a tap anytime he wanted to perform. He'd make no mistakes, just nail it every time, every take.
And I was going to ask about that. Like, how did the kind of cast come on board? Tom, Chrissy, who plays Sarah, and, you know, Emily Booth, Nicholas Vince. How did you get them on board the project?
The way we did that was Nicholas Vince and Emily Booth are kind of Fright Fest friends. Emily Booth was growing up in Hastings as well, so we're the two horror kids from Hastings, and she's got this amazing presenting career for Fright Fest and things, obviously. And an acting career as well with kind of gorier films. We wanted to take her down more of a naturalistic path with a found footage film. Nicholas Vince is great, and we'll announce something later that he's doing with us. Yeah, you probably met him in Glasgow. He does go down there. Have you met Nicholas Vince?
I mean, I've not kind of had a conversation with him. I've definitely been in the same audience with him, but I've not,
like, hear his laugh.
Hung out. Yeah.
Well, if you ever see him at a Fry Fest event, just go up and say hello to him. He's going to be
he's a lovely guy.
He'll talk to everybody.
Nicholas is great. So, and then the others were through Miles Anthony, who's a casting agent, and we knew he had some very talented actors that were. We felt not being stretched enough in genre material, because we love horror. And the reason we love it is it's great actor bait. I just think it's where you get to go through all the emotions. And I always say this about horror. Other genres are great. It's like having a Coke. But when you've got a horror film, it's like a double Jack Daniels and Coke sat at the bar. And that's just much stronger drink, just better. Not necessarily, you know, we love films like Notting Hill, but the thing about horror is it can take performers and story to some really crazy levels. So yeah, we wanted to stretch because we knew they had it in them. Chrissy Randall, Tom Clayton Wheatley, Nicole Miners, and they're the three other actors, I think, apart from Emily Booth and Nicholas Vince. Great, great team. Yeah, great to work with it.
And I was also wondering, what made you decide to co-direct the film?
Sam and I have got a shorthand with horror. He'll talk more about this, but we just know. We're very much about performance, like I just said, in my opinion. And we just have a shorthand with what we want to see on screen. And it was just a very nice fluid. It's like two heads acting as one sometimes, is why I think with this film, that was the right way forward for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we watch a lot of horror films, watch a lot of, you know, classic horror films from the 80s and 70s and 60s. And we've been to Fright Fest. I've been to Fright Fest 8 years, and you've probably been there for about 10 years now. So we've seen a lot of the same films, and we do have variations in opinion, but at the end of the day, with horror films, it's normally about the characters, you know, do you invest in the story? A lot of, and we both met studying a film directing course, and we kind of talked a lot about what films we like have been in horror and things we don't like. So we both know each other quite well about our personal tastes. And
yeah, the cliches is fun, isn't it? When we go to Fright Fest, there's certain horror cliches that always come up. We list them. So like the rage kill, is where one of the characters gets so annoyed, they just beat someone to death for about half a minute, and there's blood everywhere, and we call it the rage kill. And you see it in so many movies, and you just go, oh, here's the rage kill. So we're aware, we have these late night movie nights where we see really weird stuff, like Visitor Q, you know, really out there stuff. Sam loves
Takeshi Miike, yeah. So I'm quite a big Takeshi Miike fan. He was kind of director that I started watching probably in my late teens. And I liked his kind of work ethic. I think, you know, on over the turn of the century, each year he'd be making anywhere between 10 and 15 films a year.
But what I love about that is he offended you. So I think when you come across really good material, like I was offended when I saw, what is the Requiem for a Dream? Because I saw it on Christmas Day and it kind of ruined my Christmas. It was just so scary and horrible. Now, when Sam saw Visitor Q, he was offended by it. And then, like, it became his favourite director. So I love that kind of material that upsets you. Yeah. And then really respect.
I was 19 at the time. I'd seen Audition and I'd seen Itchy the Killer. I was probably between I was 17 and 18. And then I was kind of like seeking out these other films. And then I got Visitor Q. And have you seen Visitor Q?
I've got on DVD, but I've not yet got around to watching it. Like I've watched quite a lot of Mickey films, but I've still not got around to watching it. I'll watch it soon.
Oh man, you are in
on a Sunday afternoon. Have a roast dinner, get a nice cup of tea, and then watch.
Save it for Christmas morning.
Or your family over, bring your family over, and then get
yeah,
it's very
yeah.
fun. It's a crazy movie, but we deliberately seek out everything, so you know we love all of it.
I mean, it doesn't surprise. I mean, I know I've read about Visitor Q, and I'm aware it's a crazy movie. Mind you, most of Mickey films are, you know, like you said, the Audition, Ichi the Killer, Gozu. You know, like yes, it's weird shit, but yes. He's a great director.
I like the idea that he's not necessarily made a classic every film he's made. The fact that he keeps making stuff and trying, he just chucks loads of stuff at the wall. Whereas stuff that sticks is like some of the best horror films of all time. But he's kind of, I like the kind of just keep making stuff and keep putting it out and then, you know, go into the next project, put that out.
Yeah, it's like the Roger Corman thing. I mean, Roger Corman would make all these movies and he's known as this kind of B director. And yet he's made things like The Mask of the Red Death and The Pitch and the Pendulum, some really great horror classics. And I think it's more about, I mean, Samurai, it's a weird thing because we're really happy that we played Fright Fest and we're working very hard every day to try and make horror. And it's a hustle. It's not easy to do that. It really is backbreaking stuff. But we've got some friends who talk a lot about, you know, their film that they want to do. And I think there's a perfectionist vibe to the mentality there that gets in the way of things. And I think if you just press ahead, set a deadline and make stuff, obviously we want to have a high bar for quality and we do make sure that we are happy with something before running with it. But that sense of producing and not developing and actually getting stuff made and really going through the hell that is hell at times to do that, you then get the rewards. So, yeah, if we're going to inspire anyone out there, it's break your back. And when you feel close to crying, welcome. That's day one. And it's going to get worse, but better.
Well, you know,
it really gets really hard, but then it gets really good.
I mean, we brought Blackmagic Pockets in my camera 4K. Got a lens, you know, memory cards, had a laptop.
We're building a little bit of a kit, yeah.
Yeah, you just acquire the time. But, you know, you've got to make the film. What's the film that you can make right now? Who do you know? What locations can you get? Which actors do you know? Make sure, you know, cover expenses, get people fed well.
Yeah.
It's not about waiting for the money. It's all about making what you can.
Now right go now. To the, I, that waiting for the money is the killer. So you've just got to, like, literally find a way or make one, hustle. And do something imaginative with smaller resources and try to do that. Because waiting for the money is just, there's no money. Del Toro, Guillermo del Toro is waiting for, there's no money. And COVID and cinemas, it's all kind of messed up. It's also an opportunity where you saw films like The Host and They're Outside came out at Digital Fright Fest. And then all these films that we're talking about, Swerve and all this stuff is happening. So it doesn't stop going. The machine is just constant. I don't know what that means, really, but the machine is just constant, like in Labyrinth.
Just keeps going and going and going.
Should we talk about Frostbite?
Yes, right. Bigot, can we announce something to you?
You can. Sure, go ahead.
All right. Let me just begin with the elevator pitch on it, and then we'll elaborate. So we're shooting on the 15th to the 25th with so many COVID precautions in place that it's been a nightmare. But it's hard enough to do low budget filmmaking. But anyway, we've now done all that. We're doing a film called Frostbite about Santa Claus turning into a werewolf on Christmas Eve and tearing up the town. So coming down chimneys, he's eating his reindeer, I don't give too much away, but he's just going on a rampage, very different in tone to their outside. It should be loads of fun. Nicholas Vince, who I say this every time, actually is Santa Claus. That's his secret, but we're not allowed to tell anyone. He's playing himself. He's playing Santa Claus. Emily Booth is back. Mark Arnold is in it. Mark Arnold was in Teen Wolf with Michael J. Fox in 1985. As the bully, the basketball bully. And it's his first werewolf comedy, I think, since then. So really happy to have him in the film. So we're doing that. That's a found footage film that we're trying to do, not like Cloverfield, because we don't have that budget, but that sensibility of chaos on camera that they did in that was really fascinating.
The production values are going to step up a lot since they're outside. Yeah. We've got, you know, light, got big, powerful, like, quite expensive lights, got smoke machines, snow machines. We've got Santa's sleigh being built.
We've got a Santa's sleigh. It's going to be so much fun. I hope, because that's all we want, a Christmas Eve movie where when you've seen Die Hard, which is obviously the best Christmas film ever, and Gremlins. And you've seen It's a Wonderful Life and all those lovely ones, you just go, fucked up. I want to see Santa turn into a werewolf and eat his reindeer and go to midnight mass.
because the tagline is Seasons Eatings.
Yeah, Frostbite, Seasons Eatings.
That's
and
good.
Our poster is Santa with his sack, his claws holding that sack in a snowstorm, Frostbite. So yeah, we've got to deliver that quite soon. But that is coming up, and
you're filming that this month, did you say? The 10-day shoot.
Next week. We're filming next week, aren't we? Next Tuesday we start.
Yeah. So it's turning into Christmas in the middle of Surrey. We won't say where just yet, because we've got to confirm that. But, yep, it's going to be early Christmas in that we've all been dying to make something else, you know, during COVID. And we've done all the protocol to make sure that this is... Because that really is a thing. And we've gone actually higher with that. Yeah, we can't. There's nothing exciting to talk about COVID. It's just a tragic thing for a lot of people. So, but anyway, back onto the film. That should be snow and blood and Christmas music and all that stuff. It's going
to
be great.
Well, you want it to be like a really good midnight movie showing around Fright Fest. Yeah. I think that's the aim, to get look at a really good midnight or, you know, early or late evening slot, have a few beers, and it's going to be full of laughs, full of great court set pieces, really funny situations.
So, yeah, we love the midnight movies, don't we? Because we do them. We have a curry and a few beers, and then you've got midnight movies, and you'll know them all. You know, you've got Bad Taste, Brain Dead, Evil Dead 2. One is slightly different in tone, actually. It's more of a 10 p.m. movie. They're Outside is a 9 p.m. movie. So when any movie that comes about, you know it's kind of time of day that you should watch it. So with The Visitor Q, by the way, it's a 3 a.m. movie.
Okay, that's good to know.
6 a.m. If you want to really wrong.
2 p.m. boxing day.
6 a.m. First thing in the morning. But yes, yeah, so it's, you know, we're filming that in 5 days. So it's just manic. We've got all this stuff turning up and lots of stuff going on.
And are you going to be co-directing this again, this
we
one?
Are, indeed, yeah. So we are back to bring Christmas cheer to one and all. So we will be, yes.
We're going to try and get it into the next year's August Fright Fest. That's our target anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we hope they like it. With those guys, you know, we love Fright Fest, so we always show them stuff. And we keep our fingers crossed. Yeah.
Especially with your second film, you've got to do something quite fantastic. Once you've got your first film out, you've got to do your second film's got to live up to your first film and almost exceed it as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're hoping to do.
You were saying this one's also kind of a found footage one. Is that kind of your favorite horror subgenre?
No. So it's a trilogy. So there's a found footage trilogy. It's not the favorite because I love coverage. We both love coverage. But it is a way to tell stories that's very immediate. And we wanted to do They're Outside, Frostbite, and another film called Advent, about a cursed advent calendar. And the thing about these three films is that they're just three found footage films that we wanted to tell that aren't out there. But then we're going to do a body horror where it's traditional coverage and it's sick and really messed up. My God. Get ready for a bug film that will... we want people hiding under their seats. So we hype a lot, took a lot of hype. We're trying to live up to that hype. You know, hide under your seat. But to get there, it's always interesting to think, how can you do that? How can you make someone actually... I remember Eli Roth was so happy when he did Hostel and somebody ran out to be sick. And he said, yes. He was so happy with that. So different genres. Horror's crazy. You've got Ghost Story with their outside, and then just within the genre, such a big umbrella. So you've got films like Brain Dead, and then you've got the classic Dracula films, and it's such a big umbrella. I always think that with horror, that people tell you, oh, I don't like horror all the time. You go, oh. And then they say, I love Rosemary's Baby. And you go, that's horror. But as we know, some people aren't comfortable with the words, so they'll say it's a thriller. But it's this all-encompassing genre. It's an amazing thing.
The worst term is elevated horror.
That's God. Just so... You don't hear elevated romantic comedy, do you? So it's just saying it's above all other films. It's the most arrogant... Like, it just means that there's nothing... There's probably nothing in it that's particularly... I don't know, sometimes it's about the gore or something. It's like elevated.
It's a horror film. It's like saying that we're kind of slightly embarrassed. It's like The Shining. They say it's probably the one they say is the most is an elevated.
Notting Hill is an elevated romantic comedy because it's what? What does that mean? It's just, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think they're all in the same boat, horror films.
Debbie and does. It's just elevated pornography.
I agree. Like I think for a lot of horror fans, probably the term elevated horror kind of sticks in the throat. Right? I mean, it's not that, I mean, the films that get tagged elevated horror, I often like those films. They're often kind of more slow burn, more psychological. It's
Hereditary.
Yeah, things like that. But the actual term itself is something of a bugbear, because like you say, yeah. I think it's kind of created by non-horror fans to kind of justify liking a horror film which they look down upon.
Exactly. Whereas, as we discussed at midnight, the elevated choice to make is Brain Dead. And at 9 p.m. you definitely did want to watch Midsommar. But at midnight you might want to, you know, it would be elevated in terms of choice at that hour of the day. So yeah, I just think it's it feels like it's picking on the little kids in the playground. It feels like a school bully came in. So I'm elevated horror, back to the wall, Brain Dead, bad taste, give us your pocket money. It's like, what are you talking about? We've been here all year. So that's the way I see it. I think it's, I don't know, elevated horror. Come on, man.
I think it's kind of been placed on those films. So I don't think necessarily those films have kind of... I don't think necessarily Jordan Peele made Get Out being like, I'm making an elevated horror. I think, like, you know, like other people kind of put that tag on that. You know, I think often those films that are so-called elevated horrors are made by people who actually do like horror films when they're not necessarily comfortable with the tag.
I completely agree with that. I think there's something definitely to be said for that. So the thing is that these films are often got more of a social message sometimes, but even that, you're right. Sometimes these films get made without that being part of the thinking, and sometimes it is part of the thinking, you know, Night of the Living Dead, etc. Although the ending of that's very debatable in whether that was a deliberate choice or not. But the thing about it being elevated, yeah, it normally comes from it being a film, sometimes without so many of the gory elements, pushing out the psychological elements, maybe with stars involved. And it's more of a sales agent term. So, you know, we're dealing with sales agents and they say, oh, we're looking for elevated genre content. Some will use the word horror, some will say supernatural thriller. So it is a complex thing. It's really complex because what horror means, you know, Stephen King talks about what horror means versus terror and versus schlock and things like that. So it does go into a lot of stuff we won't go into right now.
We're horror filmmakers. We're never going to say we're
not. Oh, we love the word. Yeah. We will own it. Frightfest is a horror festival that also plays drama and sci-fi, and that's just fine. We love all of it. It's great stuff.
As obvious, patently massive horror fans yourselves, and obviously people who are very aware of the cliches of horror, they're outside, you know, found footage. Your Frostbite is also going to be found footage. Were you very conscious of avoiding cliches, and were you at all nervous about making like a found footage movie? Because like that's, you know, post Paranormal Activity, that particular subgenre has become so oversaturated.
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking because people hate these films sometimes. So, I mean, even I don't like them that much. So there's a found footage film festival and I wouldn't want to sit through that really. But when I saw The Host, I was so happy. And when I saw Borderlands and Willow Creek, I was so delighted by those films that I think when you can do something interesting within it, it's amazing. So Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity are cases in point where it did do something. So it was nerve-wracking, yes, but the limitations give a certain freedom.
I think there was a lot of Paranormal Activity rip-off films. Paranormal Activity. And I think not so necessarily bad found footage films, they were just ripping off Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, there's no soul to that, is there? They just want to, there's a cache in movies, but I think we wanted to do something where there were no jump scares. We like Ghostwatch. I mean, the thing is that a lot of people cite Ghostwatch 1992 with Pipes, you know, very scary film, which I'm sure you may have seen, BBC faux documentary. Have you seen that one? Do you know
that
film? So everyone goes back to that, I think, because it's about this bloody cross-dressing child murderer. And it ends up with Sarah Green, who was a kids' TV presenter, being dragged into a closet under the stairs by a pedo demon. It's like, what? And that was just on TV at like 9 or whatever it was when we were all... That's terrifying. And I think you want to replicate that. It's hard because the stuff that scared you when you were younger, people have different fear levels. Some people, they can't watch horror at all. People like Sam and I just watch too many of them, so we're chasing scares. But it's really hard to find a new roller coaster that does it. But occasionally, we do find something kind of freaky.
I think the scariest film that I'd seen in recent years was probably definitely Hereditary. That really freaked me out. And I mean, with found footage, I think films like Creep use the format really well. I think Creep's probably the best found footage film I've seen in the last 10 years, at least. Anyway, it's probably my favourite found footage film, Creep.
Creep is so good, isn't it? Because it's character-based. Do you know the film Creep, where the guy invites the guy? Yeah. There's two films called Creep. There's the underground one, which is
the Duplass one. And I know the one. Brilliant. I know the one you're meaning. Yeah, I know the. I've seen both the subway one and
which is okay at the end. It's not so good, but Creep is great. Hell House LLC kind of was creepy. I watched it one night. And there were some things that happened in that that were, I really like that. That was a found footage film. I think when I saw that, I realized that perhaps, because Their Outside had been written as a drama and it was more traditional, and then it wasn't quite working. And I thought, well, what if the guy was in there with a camera, literally in this girl's face, trying to get her to step outside? And it came together a lot more. But I had, like a lot of people, probably given up a little bit on found footage. And then I saw Willow Creek and Hell House LLC and the houses that October built as well. And I thought, oh, they're really good. They're all really good. And there is life in that format.
I think the other really good found footage film that I'd seen in recent years is Found Footage 3D, which is absolutely hilarious. I love the scene where they try and get the old guy, you know, outside the bar or the petrol station to sort of say that don't go in the woods kind of thing, but all the kind of, they're trying to set up their fake found footage film and trying to get all the cliches that everybody knows. Right. And even the joke about them using the 3D cameras for no reason whatsoever. It's really funny.
I've not seen that one, but I'll try and track that down.
I think we're probably making the only, to my knowledge, the second ever comedy found footage horror film.
Yeah, so the mad thing with Frostbite is obviously... you know, it's not going on. There's not really a Santa. There is, but, you know, it's not really a Santa that turned into a werewolf on Christmas Eve. So we're deliberately doing a found footage comedy horror where we're asking people to run with that to just have a good time. Because normally it's meant to be real, right? You're like, oh, we're at home and someone's, you know, like with their outside, there's a real documentary. In Frostbite, you're right though, Sam, is it troll hunters that deliberately...
Yeah. I was going to mention Troll Hunters. That's the only other
that
one.
That was a great film. That
sounds like similar to that.
Yeah, that was a good morning film at Fright Fest, wasn't it? One year. That was really good. Yeah.
I love the idea that all the pylons around are they're just built to keep the trolls from roaming into the cities.
Yeah. No, I forgot about that film. That's a really good example of a film where if you decide to say, okay, yeah, Santa's turned into a werewolf, they've got an ice skate, they're going to go and try and kill him. Let's see where this goes.
I mean, as soon as you say Nicholas Vince is playing Santa Claus as a werewolf, you're going to want to watch it.
I hope so. I doubt it's the film I would... When we make stuff, it's the films that we would queue up in the rain to see. The stuff that just isn't... that we haven't seen it. So Agoraphobia, Ghost Story, Santa turning into a werewolf, stand-up comedian gets a heckler that turns into a stalker.
I think having a concept that you can explain it in one sentence.
We like high concept because low budget high concept in the indie world is tough. You've got to survive. So you've got to be able to sell this thing with a poster and a trailer and a log line. And so, I actually believe in that anyway. I like those films, you know. I just always like them.
Because our kind of one phrase explanation for Their Outside is Blair Witch meets Wicker Man.
That's an easy, yeah. And in story-wise, you're right, it's a bit longer to say, you know, agoraphobia is tied to something supernatural rather than psychological. It's actually one of the films where it's harder to explain it in a sentence, whereas what happens when Santa turns into a werewolf on Christmas Eve is like the fastest pitch ever. And I think you see the whole movie in a way. And we're always, I always like Groundhog Day, you know, the guy wakes up and it's the same day every day. That's really good. You just get that, you know where that's going.
And I think especially low budget horror as well, you need to be able to sell your idea immediately to people. Especially if you're going for a festival and you're going through the brochure and you're making your decisions quickly. We need to grab people's attentions when they see our film.
So They're Outside, Frostbite, these titles as well. We like to slam stuff out there that's kind of heckle, bang, what is that? We're learning as we go along, but a part of it, this is a really creaky chair, it's probably messing up the audio. Part of it is having something clear, high concept horror, I think is a way in for people. When you blur the genres a bit, which you're allowed to do if you're Tarantino, and it does happen in horror a lot, and it can work really well. But it depends. It's a minefield, but a good one.
So you're going to do Frostbite next week, and then are you going to keep you go and then you're going to go into completing the trilogy, or then you're going to go into Heckle?
So Heckle's been made. So
Heckle's already been made. Sorry.
I hope that we get an announcement about where that might be playing quite soon. I'm not allowed to say anything beyond that.
Right.
But there's some announcements from festivals coming up soon. So Heckle's ready. Then there is the third film in the found footage trilogy that we could look at end of this year. And we like to keep working, so we probably will. It's like we just keep working on stuff. Well,
we also filmed a documentary earlier in Jamaica. We spent all of February in Jamaica making a documentary about ska music as well.
As you do. No, so we worked with a female producer who took us out to Jamaica to film that. And that was a really amazing experience just before COVID. So we got back actually, or we'd have been stuck in Jamaica, which would have been quite good. I'm quite annoyed that didn't happen in a way. But we're here making horror, so that's good.
I don't know if you want to mention the other documentary or should we not mention that?
No, we could do it. Yeah, so I mean, the last thing I guess we're doing is World of Horror, which is a deep dive. This is quite comedic, actually. So it's a deep dive into the world of genre festivals because, you know, in Brussels, you've got a really crazy festival. What's that one called in Brussels?
Biff.
Biffa. Yeah.
International Fantasy
That's the one.
Something, yeah, yeah.
And then there's a wine and horror festival in Slovenia.
Of course.
We at the beginning of the year had this dream year lined up.
Great idea.
We were going to go and just film all these festivals around the world. And I think almost every single flight has just been torn to shreds and the trip thrown into confetti.
So we were planning to go to America in October, but see, that's not going to happen.
Meet Joe Bob Briggs, who does...
I'll talk about Joe in... Driving. He's going to be... So Joe Bob Briggs is going to do a voiceover narration for Frostbite as well.
Yeah.
So we're going to do an animation of Joe Bob Briggs introducing the movie.
Because we loved, do you know that show on Shudder, The Last Drive-In?
The Last Drive-In, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's this crazy Texas guy, and yeah, he's doing some voice work, but we really like his, he'll play a movie, stop it after 20 minutes, talk about what was funny about it, and then, you know, he's like a horror host, like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark or something. Yeah, we were going to meet him, but we'll have to probably do everything virtually now. We'll see what happens.
Is there the other thing with the other... Should we talk about the other projects?
Which one?
There's another project. They just keep on coming. This is great.
No, surely there's not. We'll die of projects. What one, Sam?
The pilot.
All right. We don't want to saturate this. So that's only a pilot, so we can talk about that. So with Emily Booth, we're doing something hopefully called Back Row Horror Show. Back Row Horror Show. And this is sat in the back row with Emily Booth, who's a corpse presenting potentially trauma movies, some of the trauma catalog, which we all love. Trauma movies, best midnight movies ever, Kabuki Man and all that stuff is so great. And she's going to be there doing kind of narration, a bit like the Joe Bob Briggs stuff actually, and the Elvira Mistress of the Dark stuff. If we can get that off the ground, we're trying to take that to Shudder and other places and see if we can turn that into a show. So it's busy because of COVID. We're just working on stuff.
That certainly sounds like you've got a full schedule ahead of you.
Yes.
It's both bloody knackered. So.
It's really knackering. But the thing is, because like we're really passionate about it, you go through to 3, 4am just doing this stuff every day. I think if anyone entered the film industry without a passion for it, they would... not survive very long, because it's only the passion that actually allows you to do any of this stuff, really. If you took that component out, you would look like Doc Cotton. And she looks great. I'm not Doc Cotton, but you look like Doc Cotton in like a day, basically. But I love Doc Cotton. I feel bad saying that. But I
know what you mean by that, though, yes.
Yeah. Bless Doc.
But yeah, I mean, you just kind of, instead of, you know, playing computer games or, I don't know, watching television, watching Netflix... You know, we spend our time doing stuff, preparing for our films. So this is kind of another, you know, it's almost like we're replacing our pastime, the times we would put into doing other outside of 9-to-5 type jobs, but actually putting it into our hobby and our interest in making horror films.
But love the cinema, and we saw they put Back to the Future back at the cinema. Not interested, I wish I was, in seeing Tenet much, but Bill and Ted Face the Music, super happy about that one. I think that's coming out next week.
Oh, I can't wait for James Bond. James Bond.
Oh, and the new Bond. We saw the bridge in Jamaica.
We went to some of the locations that they filmed the new James Bond film in as well. So that was pretty cool. We had a nice day out on the rafts along the river. So there's going to be a scene in the new James Bond film where there's like a bridge over this Jamaican river in Port Antonio.
It's a Bond scene. Bond's running over the Jamaican bridge and it's going to be a good Bond
show. Bond shit is happening, yeah.
We'll keep you updated on the podcast, I hope, about projects that we're doing, because we love the horror audience more than any other audience. I just think the Fright Fest audience and people who like horror films just seem to have a higher intelligence, I found. I don't know what it is, but they just seem to be tuned into being respectful of a cinema viewing, or just of genre and storytelling. There's something about a horror audience that's elevated above any other. It's an elevated audience.
They're an elevated audience, yeah.
That is something we can try and put into pop culture, yeah.
Absolutely. Elevated horror fans. Well, it has been great to have you both on the podcast. It's been great chatting. You certainly made my job very easy as a host. And I wish you the very best of luck with filming of Frostbite with that. And yeah, come back on the podcast anytime you would like.
That's very kind. Thank you.
We look forward to hearing this. And
you're an elevated host, good sir.
You're an elevated host.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Laser.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was my guests, Irel and Sam there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And as always, I would like to thank you, listener, for checking out this latest edition of New Horror Express. Remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Also, be sure to join us again in just over a week's time for our next regular interview edition of the show. Until then, though, see ya!